Jim Harris talked to me about mental health in a state agency, and in particular your story, how you've been through the mill and come out the other side. Talk to me. Yeah, so this is quite a difficult subject still for me to talk about. In a state agency, we're surrounded by, and for me, it's always been surrounded by and put into an environment where we have to be the person that we have to be to do that job. Therefore, we have to be seen in a certain way. I don't think it's exclusive to men in a state agency. I mean, when I was at Frank Innes, I would say that the majority of the staff that I employed were female.
Okay.
90% of my branch managers were female. And the competition and sticking the chest out was as prevalent in those as any male environment.
So it's not a male or female thing, but the question is why do people feel they have to act in this way? Because they're almost not being true to themselves, are they?
They're not. And that's where you start to get the problems. I don't think people act in that way because to show any form of vulnerability is exposure to a potential attack. We've talked about before.
It's seen as a weakness, isn't it?
It is seen as a weakness, 100% seen as a weakness. And, you know, most probably the only element, and in my understanding of human behaviour, and I've studied human behaviour, how people work, through neurosciences, through psychology, through behavioural, through neuro-linguistic programming for over 30 years. But the part about vulnerability for me was the bit that I missed completely, because my total upbringing and instinct has always been about fight or flight. So I look back now, and we've talked about oxytocin and the causer of stress. The thing that oxytocin in your brain, when you are stressed, the thing that it will push you to all the time is fight or flight. So, you know, if you fly away from things, you just hide. You hide behind a mask, you reinvent yourself, you hide behind your success, or you hide behind the fact that you've got a position you shouldn't really have. Or you fight. And you become aggressive and you end up in tribunals and disciplinaries and known as a troublemaker, etc. So actually, the art of showing true vulnerability is not available for, I would say, 99% of people. It's just not available. And again, we've talked before about what I consider strong leadership and the skills that should be made, what decisiveness and, you know, firmness should be applied to commercial running of businesses. Actually, it can't be done without people, and therefore empathy, collaboration and caring are massive, massive skills. If you have a great leader or even a manager with those skills, then vulnerability becomes more of an option. Where vulnerability doesn't become an option, you will find yourself in fight or flight. That causes more stress. And it's that stress that perpetuates the masking and reinventing of yourself. And I'm talking now from personal experience and looking back at the versions of me that I've been in different environments that I've had through my career.
So you were mentoring and guiding people whilst creating a false mask for yourself?
Yeah, the mentoring and guidance was always genuine because it was out without agenda to me. But never once during the mentor, and it has helped many people. Many people have said, I didn't realise I thought like that. But never once have I, and was I able to particularly self-reflect. And I guess the only way I can describe it really, Chris, is that, you know, everything I did and ever done to help people was genuine and without agenda. But the man in the mirror was the image of the person I believed was who I was looking at. And it took until something really affected my mental health to see that actually the man in the mirror was not the person who I really wanted to be.
When did you hit this self-awareness and what did you do about it?
So, through circumstances towards the back end of last year, I found myself in a quite stressful environment. and became very self-reflective, very introvert, a little bit woe is me. I found that I didn't know what my purpose was in life. I didn't know what my why was. Bit caught in the money trap of, I bring in half the money into our household, and without that, we don't eat, sort of thing. Not quite, but the mentality that sits behind that. So that inherent responsibility to provide my wife with my share of my obligation, my commitment to our lifestyle, etc. And all of that perpetuated itself into being very introverted and very self analytical and very self-reflective. And what I didn't realize during that period of time was that what I had done would put this, and I can only describe it like a glass wall around me. And everything I was seeing in life, I could see, but I couldn't touch. And Christmas, even with my family over Christmas, and it's quite emotional for me to say these things, is there was times when I felt like I was looking through the window of watching my family have a great time. And it was caused because of my inability to be vulnerable at work. And when I did show vulnerability, it was met with what I would never want to meet somebody's vulnerability with from my human perspective. So it took for my wife to become a great leader and point out some real home truths to me, is that actually, whilst I was trying to find a job that made me happy and focus on all the skills, and I spent days writing all the skills I'd got, all the experience I've got, all the things that I can do, all the achievements I'd had, and she literally just ripped them up and went, "You're missing the point. You're talking to the man you see in the mirror. The man I see doesn't know why he wants to get out of bed in the morning. Has lost sight of the fact that even without a job, your purpose in life is to add value to my life, a future for your children's life. That's what you need to focus on, not how good and brilliant you've been and how many people you've helped and what characteristics you've got." And that was quite a hard thing to do. She then delivered a message to me, which was earth-shattering, is that she suggested that I needed help. And my instant reaction was, "I've studied psychology, human behavior, blah, blah, 30 years. I. She went, "No, no, you need help." And I went along to a doctor. The doctor was an amazing man who I've since been back and thanked for changing my life. Diagnosed me with depression, and talked to me and let me, for the first time, unburden myself with all the irrational and illogical and all the macho
So you went to,
shit.
do you go to a psychologist then?
No, a doctor did it for
The
me.
doctor did it
The
for you.
GP was an amazing human being, and
And how's that changed your life?
it's changed it incredible. So, I now have a purpose in my life. I now know what I stand for as a human being. I now am able to be myself for the first time for a long time. It's still difficult talking about it.
Does it get easier talking about it?
No, it doesn't. Because the emotions there are still
Okay.
raw, and in some way, Chris, I don't want to lose that. I want to keep that emotion with me because that's what I believe now makes me a better human being. Not better than anybody else, but I can look at myself in the mirror and go, "Yeah, kindness is something that I hold true. Vulnerability is important. Being mutually respectful and mutually beneficial is important. Being collaborative, understanding people's story." My daughter, and if she ever watches this, she'll kill me, is 15, and she taught me a lesson this year, was about being judgmental and not knowing people's backstory. And it's, very teenager talk, but she's absolutely right, So I think my ability to see people for who they are, to understand their journey, has helped. And the reason it's helped me most is now I feel at the greatest point in my life to be able to help people, the greatest I've potentially been able to help people ever.
Thank you for telling your story today, Jim.
You're welcome.